Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Fred Obiero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast. My guest today is Tom Kosnick, founder and president of Visus Group. How's it going, Tom?
It's going great, Fred. Thank you so much for the invitation and looking forward to the next few minutes on the podcast here.
Awesome. Before we start on this episode, I have one small request to our listeners. As we continue to grow the Ivy Podcast, we would appreciate if you would take just a minute of your time to leave us a review on the show, because reviews make a huge difference to podcast channels like ours. Now, time for the episode with Tom. So Tom, for those of that may not be familiar with you and your work, please introduce yourself and talk about what you do at Visus Group.
Sure, Tom Kosnick. I'm based out of Chicago. I've been servicing the staffing industry for 27 years now. And we do two things. One, we have a peer roundtable program, and we've been doing that for 27 years. Fred, I'm happy to say we have clients that have been in our peer roundtable program for more than 20 years.
So that's impressive.
Thank you. And then we are a resource hub to the staffing industry. Anything related to organizational development, change management, we do a lot of assessments on staffing companies. We do a lot of financial analysis, comp plan redesign, executive coaching, change management. And we typically get called in when a staffing company has hit a plateau. You've seen it, I'm sure, a lot in your line of work. And they've tried this, they've tried that, and they're looking to get somebody, fresh eyes, to bring them some ideas and thoughts and things that they could do differently in order to get back on the growth track. And so that's what we do. And I have to say, we've got such fantastic clients. The staffing industry, it's got no short supply of just wonderful people in the staffing industry. They're people. And we've certainly enjoyed servicing the industry over the last 20 some years.
It's actually perfect timing because of all the changes that are happening in our industries, you know, with the remote work and companies trying to get their workforce to go back to the office. So one thing that I wanted to talk about is we are starting to see shifts in the workplace where some employers are requiring their workforce to fully return to the office. We saw this, I think it was a week or two ago, with Elon Musk with Tesla. What impact do you see this having on the staffing industry in the short term?
Oh, short term, we are still coming out of COVID. And it's if you look at the data, Fred, if you do not have some kind of a remote work alternative, you're going to have a much less candidate pool to bring in new employees. And it's not just one generational thing. If you, again, the research shows that multiple generations now want a flexible, a remote work arrangement. And if your company is not offering some kind of a remote option, number one, your candidate pool, bringing new employees in, is going to be radically reduced. And then in the short term, you know, bringing folks back into the office, there's tons of benefits for people, employees working together and things like that. But hey, you just got to ease into it, and maybe it's a couple of days a week to start out with, and then you know next quarter it's 3 days a week, and look, folks are going to if it's not raining, if it's not snowing, if there's a lot of benefits to working in the office, collaborating. People want to be with one another. I mean, who wants to sit at home in a small apartment working remote 5 days out of the week? It's no fun. So I have, Fred, I've got clients that said the first people that wanted to come back into the office 5 days a week were the 20-something year olds because they just missed the collaboration.
Friendship.
Yeah. Yes. And learning from some of the older workers that that have been closing deals for years and have been successful. So, but yeah, short term. Gosh, you got to figure out the remote thing. Otherwise, yeah,
and I like what you said about, you know, easing into it, not taking a swift approach. You know, from this day, everybody has to be fully remote 40 hours a week. The approach that Tesla's taking, which is contrary to, you know, popular belief. Now, on the flip side, I want to talk to you about, you know, your approach to dealing with clients when it comes to sharing market feedback with regards to how open candidates are to moving back to the office or getting some flexibility to work remote. Do you encounter challenges in this aspect? And how would you advise a client of yours on how they should go about this based on, you know, the market trends and conditions that you see for yourself?
Yeah, you have some, 67% of the jobs cannot be remote. So when you think about hospitality, when you think about manufacturing, I mean, those jobs, customer service, security, we're in downtown Chicago. So, the security folks, you know, they're not going to be working. They have to come.
Right.
To work.
So healthcare, aviation.
Yeah, exactly. 67% have to come. So that 30, whatever that is, that 33% or so that have to work remote. That's where my clients are having a challenge is communicating with their clients. And here, this is really a funny thing, Fred. The best practice is having some kind of third party data. So I can't, if I have a staffing company, I cannot go to my client and say, hey, I surveyed, Tom's Staffing surveyed the 15 companies around you, and here are their policies, and here's what mm-hmm. they're doing, and here's where you stand, and all that. And because you know what the client thinks? The client thinks, oh, that's just something that Tom made up.
Exactly. They don't believe that.
They don't believe it. They don't believe it because that's the age we're living in, right? It's the death of expertise. So you really need third party valid and reliable, and there's a lot of it out there. Valid and reliable third party data that you can go to your clients and say, "Hey, this is coming from whatever
Gartner."
Yeah, exactly. And that's how my clients that are succeeding in this area, that are moving the dime, helping their clients understand. That's how they're doing it. And you know, the beauty of all this is that for years, staffing companies have said, how can we become consultants? You know, you go to the consultative selling training programs and all that, and they say, oh, you want to become a consultant. You know, you don't want to get away from the you don't want to be the transactional service provider, whatnot. Well, when you're providing data like that to your clients and helping them make smart decisions about their workforce, you're positioning yourself as a consultant to your clients, and everybody wins.
And I like that approach because number one, with backing up what you're saying with data from reputable sources, I mentioned Gartner, maybe Forbes, that helps you sway your clients so that they can fully understand, you know, what the market trend is and how they can adapt to it. So you're helping them make well-informed decisions while you're doing that.
Correct. Yeah.
We went through a phase where the Great Resignation was impacting a lot of companies. This could be attributed to several factors such as burnout or people just seeking out new professional challenges. What do you see with your clients on how they are addressing burnout?
Yeah, it's a big problem. You know, when in the staffing industry, we have firms that are placing people on the lower pay end of these $15 to $18 jobs. Oh my gosh. I mean, these recruiters, they just work their tails off. They get 20 people lined up to go to work at a client and four show up.
Yeah.
And then the client is calling, complaining, and and so they it's become defeating for these recruiters that are
a big problem because there's a lot of things that are out of the control of the recruiter because you've done your part as a recruiter and then the candidates have to show up, but what if they don't?
Oh my gosh. I true story. I've got a client who said that they had a job order for 70 people to start on a manufacturing line. This was a manufacturing company that was going to start a third line. The recruiters, the office, they worked to get 70 people lined up to come in and start this line. And then a day and a half before everything was supposed to start, the client calls my client and says, "Oh, sorry, we're not going off on this line. We're not going to be we won't need those 70 people."
Ouch.
Oh my gosh. I mean, she said it was just terrible. And anyway.
Yeah, that's deflating and demotivating, especially at a time like this where burnout, you can say it's an all-time high. People are switching jobs, people are quitting.
Very, very bad. So, but what I'm seeing is that we're in the summertime. So my clients are Fridays off. As long as there's a little bit of coverage in the office and whatnot, they're giving them an extra day off, during that. What is it? The 90 days of summer, we call it. Uh-huh. We call it in Chicago, the 90 days of summer between the Memorial Day and Labor Day. So some folks are giving them a half a day Friday off or Friday off, and they kind of rotate that in throughout the office. They're trying just to have just fun things. Let's lighten it up. Let's have some fun. A lot of my clients are with the burnout. We got Zoom fatigue, Fred.
That is
if
true.
They're going to get their employees to do something. Well, man, let's get them out. Let's, a picnic, a barbecue, let's rent a boat and take a boat out on a Saturday afternoon in Lake Michigan. Just something where people can get some employees together and have some fun and
help build a team camaraderie.
New faces, people
got to see each other, know who they've been communicating with for months.
Yes. And the other thing is messaging from management. I mean, management really needs to be empathetic. They need to be proactive. If they see somebody just having a terrible day or just, not in a good space, take them to lunch, sit down with them. The Gallup polls did research on this and they said one of the key reasons why people leave organizations is that they feel that their manager does not care about them.
Yeah.
We could just unpack that word care. What does that word mean? It means that I'm going to sit down, Fred, I'm going to look you in the eye and I'm going to ask you from the heart, Fred, hey, how you doing, Fred? What's going on? And I'm not going to be looking at my iPhone, playing around with text messages, talking to you. I mean, just basic. What's the other thing in terms of respect? It's another reason why people stay with organizations is that they feel that their voice is heard. They feel that they're respected by their manager and their peers.
And also appreciated for all the hard work that they're doing, all the sacrifices they're making in their own lives, right?
How much does respect cost?
That's a good question.
How much does it to be respectful to your peers and managers to their employees? How much does that take out of the operating profits of the business?
It's not a lot. Costs nothing. Takes no effort.
Yeah, it's the reverse. It adds money to the bottom line. That's what it does. So those are some of the ways that that my clients are trying to deal with the whole burnout issue.
There's a lot of competition within the staffing industry, and I'd like to know what unique strategies have you seen that have enabled companies to be successful?
Yeah, I'm going to say three things here real quick. A-class management. So people leave managers, they don't leave companies. So the staffing companies that have good management training programs, a lot of companies A lot of companies make a mistake of, oh, you're a great sales rep. Let's make you the sales manager. Mistake. Never works out. So, but you got to train, man. You got to give people management training. There are a lot of organizations that take employees and they drop them into a management role, but they don't give them any management training, any management coaching, things like that. So a competitive advantage is have just a good, robust, have really good managers in place and have good management training and mentoring going on within your organization. And why is that a competitive, why does that lead to a competitive advantage? Good management is going to have lower turnover rates within your organization. And the number one reason why clients leave staffing companies is that they have a new sales rep every 9 months. They have a new recruiter every 6 months.
It erodes continuity.
Yes. So if you can reduce your turnover rates within your organization, you're going to increase your customer retention rates. So that's one thing. The second thing I want to mention in terms of a competitive advantage is having a refined ideal client profile. It seems that now in the current market, Fred, everybody needs people. All these clients are looking for people. So a sales guy can go out on the street and come and talk to 100 people and come back with 98 job orders. And of course, you know, how many of those can we really be successful at? So, the more refined, the more clearly refined your ideal client profile. And, oh, by the way, don't just look at the demographics, the size, the industry, the number of employees, the revenue, look at the psychographics. Does this client partner with staffing companies? Do they give us feedback on a timely basis? Do they pay our bills? Are they late payers and on. So look at those. Are they collaborative, communicative? Do they respond to our emails? So that's all part of crystallizing that ideal client profile. But this, the clearer that a staffing company can be on the ideal client profile, then you're bringing in the best people that we're going to be able to succeed, that my recruiters are going to be able to succeed with. And then the third thing in terms of competitive advantage, and that is on the fulfillment side, the recruiting side, we call it skill set focused. Mm-hmm. So if the fulfillment team is focused on a handful of skill sets that we specialize in, we can build communities, we can do the LinkedIn, we can stay in touch with candidates, and it's all focus. So the big three things in terms of you want to outshine your competition, good solid management training, having a really good ideal client profile, and making sure the fulfillment team is focused on a handful of skill sets that you know you can really knock it out of the park, become specialists in.
Yeah, that's a great summary right there. So talk to us about some of the biggest challenges facing the staffing industry today, and describe how you see the market changing over the next few years in your own perspective.
How much time do we got, Fred?
I know we can talk about this for hours.
Oh my Lord. Hey, so just wrap your head around this, these statistics. The number of open jobs on the market, you know what that number is right now?
I have no idea.
11.5 million. 11.5 million.
Wow.
You know,
and
how many,
that's US only.
US only. Do you know how many active job seekers there are?
I'm going to guess less than that.
5.6 million.
Wow.
So the delta, 5.9 million, you know, around 6 million people. We could employ every single person that's unemployed right now, and we would still have a 6 million shortfall between people looking for jobs and us fulfilling jobs. So what's the biggest challenge? Supply side, recruiting. And that delta, so what's the unemployment rate is 3.2, 3.6. So that's, you know, whatever, 5.6 million people being unemployed. Even if we go into a technical recession, even if we go into a deeper slowdown, it's going to take a while. It's going to take several months for that delta to close. We're not graduating enough kids from college. Mm-hmm. We're not immigrating enough people from outside of the United States, and we're not having enough babies. If you look at the data, the supply side, the war for talent is an enormous challenge that's facing the industry right now. There are two other things that are big issues facing the industry. Internal turnover rates, no surprise, they're at record levels within staffing companies. Record levels. And you have, Fred, I've got clients that have hundreds of internal employees, national staffing companies. And when you think about the number, the 55% turnover rates, I don't know how they do it. How do you recruit and hire and onboard and train hundreds of recruiters and salespeople every year? It's an enormous challenge and problem right now. And then the third really big thing are the internal operating expenses. So wage inflation of your recruiters and salespeople, the technologies, the increase in technologies, the whole digital marketing, the increase in the whole digital marketing function, both on the sales side and the recruiting side. So, oh my gosh, those three right there: supply side, the internal turnover rates, and the increasing internal operating expenses are three enormous challenges. And then how do I, you know, in terms of, you know, over the next few years, companies that are able to solve those issues, staffing companies are able to get a handle on that, those are going to be the winners in the market.
That's great. So some of those problems could be, you know, sourced from, you know, having gone through the pandemic, obviously. And as we're coming out of the pandemic, there are a lot of important lessons learned for company leaders all around the world, so not just here in the States. What are some of the best practices and lessons learned from having been able to navigate through the pandemic that you can share with our audience?
Yeah, hats off to a lot of industries, hats off to a lot of executives, hats off to a lot of employees that were doing the work. Man, did we move a lot faster than we ever thought we could.
Yeah, we had no choice.
we had no choice. But you know what the silver lining in that is that we had, Fred, we had the technology.
Yes.
Yep. Do you remember this? Pre-pandemic, a big issue was, oh my gosh, all the millennials, they the first question they ask is, do you have a remote work option? Uh-huh. It used to be a millennial generational issue. Remember that? The whole work thing, the whole remote.
It was like a long time ago.
Yeah, it feels it's not that long ago, but it sure does feel like a long time ago. But the big lessons learned is that, we can move. First off, we have the technology and we can move fast. Yep. And so, we did move fast. We did use the technology. Was it perfect? No. Did it improve quickly? Yes. And look at Zoom. Look how fast Zoom, changed things and
it was very rapid pace, rapid development. Same thing can be said to about Microsoft Teams, Google.
Yes.
Yeah, they made it much, much easier. And to your point, it's right. You know, we had the capability, we had the technology. It just took a force of nature to get everybody moving faster.
And just think about that. We all have assumptions about the business model, about clients, about employees, about how sales are done, how recruiting is done. So the big lesson here is we've got a question. We have to continuously be questioning those assumptions. And I know we kind of hear that, well, why do you do it that way? Well, that's the way we've always done it. But the and it's not just like little things, although that is another great lesson is it's shocking the incremental. I had a client, this is a true story. I had a client, they were working into an ATS system, and I did a focus group with salespeople and the recruiters, and they had to like cut and paste. They had to cut and paste the emails and put them into their database. And they didn't realize that was an automated function. They just needed to turn on in the ATS system. And so of course, I got on, I made some calls and got on with the ATS, their software, whatever. And literally, Fred, a click of a switch, that little correction saved hundreds of hours of people cutting and pasting and doing that, all that stuff.
Being inefficient.
So the continuous improvement on a micro level like that with all the technologies, whether it's digital marketing, whether it's job boards, whether it's ATS system, whether it's a CRM system, whether it's your iPhone, Zoom, all those, there's a huge benefit in using some kind of an agile process to make those micro changes. And then the overall business model. Oh, we could never be successful working remote 5 days out of the week. Well, surprise, surprise. Here we are.
It's very different. It's the opposite.
Yeah, here we are. So, that's another best practice or lesson learned. And then the last one that I thought about is just and this has to come from executive leadership. There's got to be executive sponsorship around this, and that is a culture of flexibility, and that doesn't mean we throw processes and procedures out the door, because we do need processes and procedures, but we also need to have a culture of flexibility, and you know how this works. I mean, the bigger the company comes, the more bureaucratic becomes, the more slower change comes. Why do employees leave a big company and go to a small privately held one? Oh, wow, man, I got direct access to the owners, and man, these guys change on a dime, and on and on and on. Well, big companies, the whole culture of flexibility. It's another lesson learned. And culture is a big word we don't have time to unpack all that, but those, I would say those are the three, we can move, a lot faster than we ever thought we could move. We have the technology to do things that, we never thought we could do, the continuous improvement, micro and macro, and just, creating a culture of flexibility within our organizations. Three enormous gifts that the pandemic gave us, Fred. Three enormous leadership gifts.
I couldn't agree more. Now we come on to the last question, which is one of my favorite questions to ask all our guests. What has helped you to get to where you are? And what of advice would you give to someone that wants to pursue a career that's similar to yours?
Yeah. So it's funny, my lovely wife of soon to be 30 years, we're on
wow, July. Wow, congratulations.
18th. Thank you. July 18th. I tell folks I'm so excited to be able to say I've succeeded at something that both Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos has failed at.
You got him beat on something.
And yes, yes. And my lovely bride, she has two sisters, and she says to friends, "Well, my one sister married a full-blooded Italian, and my other sister married a full-blooded Republican." And she said, "And I married a full-blooded Polish guy." I said, "Honey, you say that as if it's a bad thing." And I said, "This Polish persistence has gotten you, gotten us this business rolling pretty well."
Yeah.
It's
a true testament to
who
love one another.
Yeah, yeah. Who is it that said showing up? Was that Woody Allen said showing up is 90% of the effort? Just showing up on the job. So I would say just having persistence at making a commitment, having persistence, which assumes that you're doing some kind of good time management. Just, you know, start with the end in mind. That was old Harold Ganin, but think things out on the front end, make a commitment to a business model and execute on a sales methodology. When I think, it's kind of hilarious when I think back 27 years ago when I first started, we'd send letters, people would send back cards, and we had a whole methodology, and I just committed to that methodology. And before you knew it, and 3 years later, I had 80 something clients in these different peer roundtables.
It's impressive.
The power of networks is you can't do it alone. So you got to be humble enough to realize that you can't do it alone. You're going to need some help. You got to figure out how to do that. And then lastly, I would say every year I allocate X number of dollars for my own improvement, for my own, whether that's taking a class, whether that's getting a coach, whether that's whatever. I do a self-assessment and I ask some folks and just say, hey, where do I really need to improve? So that continuous education, that continuous trying to, and you got to allocate time, and you got to allocate some dollars to it. So the being persistent, thinking your business model out on the front end, making a commitment, executing on sales methodology, power of networks, and always trying to improve myself. Those are the things that really have helped me succeed, and having a sense of humor about it all.
Yeah, don't take yourself too seriously, right?
Yes, yeah, because things are going to happen, and tomorrow's a new day, and the sun's going to rise.
Right. Hey, Tom, thank you so much for taking your time to talk to us today. This has been a fascinating discussion.
You're so welcome, Fred. Thank you for inviting me.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ivy Podcast. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.